After the George Floyd protests in New York City and around the country summer of 2020, West Dakota, a drag queen in Brooklyn, was inspired with an idea, a rally for black trans people. A few weeks later, her idea would become one of the most striking demonstrations New York City has ever seen, with an estimated 15,000 people taking part. It became known as the Brooklyn Liberation March. Trans and non-binary people continue to be marginalized, overly sexualized, and violently oppressed groups of people. In the past year, an estimated 50 trans and non-binary people have been murdered. It's only counting those who were not misgendered. Welcome back to City Living with Churchill, a weekly podcast that chronicles the different experiences and communities of being a young professional in New York City. Today's conversation is with community organizer, nightlife aficionado, and ballroom mother, Gia Love, on transforming trans visibility and changing the narrative from trans suffering to one of joy and community.
I, like, even in my life, like, I've experienced great pain, but I've also experienced amazing joy. And I refuse to allow a narrative to be presented to the world that my life is miserable.
Hi, Gia.
Hi, darling. How are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm happy to be here. It was hard to get here as I was so wrapped up in my own stuff, but I'm here now and that's what's important.
No, I mean, I've been looking forward to this interview because I find you to be very fascinating. Mm-hmm. I love your energy. So let's take this from the start. Being someone that's native to New York City, this is your home. Mm-hmm. You moved from the Bronx. Now you live in Brooklyn.
Yes.
You know, I'm curious that, you know, what has been your most surprising experience as a new New Yorker looking at your evolution? You know, now you're a model. You have this huge platform. I believe last year you closed out, you know, Cormac. Yeah. So I think it was, I'm very curious from your perspective, you know, looking back at your journey, what's been the most surprising experience for you?
So it's so many. I've lived in New York City for 30 years. I'm 31. I lived in Atlanta for 1 year of my life. I've had so many experiences here. I think one of the most surprising experiences is the fact that I live in Brooklyn, because I never thought I would ever live in Brooklyn. I never really went to Brooklyn. Like, you know, when you're from the Bronx, you're from the Bronx, right? And like, I'm true Bronx person through and through. But I would say a New York experience is definitely like seeing the evolution, well, I would say the de-evolution of like nightlife here. Mm-hmm. And like just remember being a teenager and being excited to really share space and community and in the nightlife space. And I think that as New York City has changed and gentrification has really spread throughout the city and more laws and policies have been put in place to like really stunt nightlife growth, especially in like the really urban areas. I think that that has been the most, you know, the most telling experience, because I remember being young and like, you know, trying to sneak into clubs and like, you know, and I feel like young people don't really have that experience that we have something to do every day, especially being a young queer person, like black queer person. Like, we had places to go every single day. And that's not the case anymore. There's a handful of collectives that host parties. It was like, these were venues that really catered to, you know, uplifting and providing joy and a nightlife experience to black and brown queer people. And like now, like, we don't own those spaces anymore. And I think that unfortunately, like, some people within our community are taking that space back up and attempting to, you know, fill the gap that is definitely needed. But shout out to all the people in nightlife. During COVID, nightlife experienced a major blow. Parties were not able to happen. A lot of them went underground, which was fab. You know what I mean? Darling, when I tell you, don't care. Let me tell you something. People were saying a lot, like, you know, people were partying. People were like, you know, like, when you're a queer person, like, some, like, for me, my home is can be triggering for me. I remember being home and I couldn't be myself. So I always sought to be outside, sought to be out of the space that was called my home. And, you know, I needed to party. I needed to hear the disco. I needed to hear the music and dance to the beat. And I was willing to risk my life to do that. And like, this is not the first time in this, you know, world that we've been through that. And I said that the world in this country is sometimes so evil to Black and brown folks, particularly, that we should get a pass and we should be able to experience joy at any cost. So I was partying crazy, but those parties were amazing, I must say.
No, I think, you know, I hear you around sort of the suppression of joy.
Right.
I recently read this article in the Washington Post by a friend, and he wrote about how, you know, Black freedom, Black liberations, and how the 13th Amendment gave freedom. But still, one part of it that I think isn't expressed a lot is around Black people's ability to just have and experience pleasure.
Right.
I think to your point about, you know, queer folks are the same thing. It's sort of, you know, we find ourselves a lot of times already suppressed in some form of fashion. And I think there's so much beauty and freedom that happens when queer people express themselves.
Right.
And so I totally understand this idea, because I felt the same thing of being at home and feeling like
the walls are closing on me. Like, I'm not going to kill myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like for a lot of, like, when your home is not your safe space, then, like, how could you tell me and make me stay there? And for me, like, even when my home is my safe space, historically has it been, so I always create safety outside of it. And like, I really kind of utilize nightlife as in a way to just express myself and be like myself authentically and really release, you know, all the stress that I have, all the pain that I have, and like leave it like on the dance floor or in the, or at the rave. So I think that, like, going back to your question, you know, we need to preserve nightlife. Nightlife is a part of the character of New York City, because you can't go anywhere in this country and experience a party like in its fullness as you experience it in New York City. And there's so many different types of parties. There's so many different, you know, ways in which you can like engage in some nightlife joy. So I think that, like, we need to really, like, you know, remember that it is a part of the character of this place, and we need to preserve it. So any policies and laws that try to really get rid of nightlife from New York City, you know, I think they need to actually have more policies and laws that get rid of the people that want to get rid of the nightlife of the city, because that is one of the reasons why people move here, you know, to experience that joy and to break away and experience some sort of freedom.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I'm a transplant to New York City.
Right.
And when I thought about New York City, what we think about is like the nightlife scene.
Right.
Every time you watch a movie or a show, anything has to do with New York City, what this showcase is always this, the nightlife, and sort of the beauty of it. So I'm a total proponent, even though I feel like the more older I'm getting, I know you're looking like, child, what are you talking about? You're still so young. No, what I'm getting, I'm like,
no, I get it.
I'm feeling more and more what I call being party pooped. I'm just tired all the time. I want to visit, you know, a comment you made. You talked about sort of, you know, we're going to live in the pandemic. You know, you're sort of stuck at home and home not being a safe space. I'm curious, you know, from your perspective, right? You're someone that it's an intersection of so many different identities. And I feel like last year, especially over the last 2 years, a lot of part of the being a Black man, for me personally, you know, you being a Black woman and, you know, this whole different force we had to face, that was one thing. Then we had a pandemic, which really was very highly disproportionate to its colored people in terms of resources. You also part of nightlife got shut down, right? So you feel all these different identities. Like, how did you cope with all of that? I mean you talked about how do you sort of
I went on with my life. Honestly, I did not let this pandemic stunt me one bit. If things were working, if there was space and I wanted to be there, I was there. I couldn't. And I honestly, for me, I got tested for COVID a lot because I was modeling. So like I never tested positive for COVID, but I did have the antibodies. And I do, you know, they say all Black They say all black people have this narrative where they say, like, I had it at the very beginning and whatever. Yeah. So I'm one of those black people where I'm like, I had it at the very, very beginning before they were doing COVID tests. Mm-hmm. And, like, I've never had COVID. So I always, like, you know, because of the work that I'm doing, I'm getting tested mm-hmm. regularly. And I'm just going to live my life and do what I have to do because, honestly, they say, you know, they say the life expectancy of a black trans woman is 35. I'm 31. I'm going to live. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't think my life expectancy is 35, but, you know, for a lot of black trans women, that is true. And I think that I want to live. I'm going to live every moment of it. And I'm not going to let anyone, like, kind of make me feel bad for, mm-hmm. you know, the choices that I make for myself, you know, because quite frankly, like, with laws, policies, a lot of people put me at risk every day. Like, yeah. They put me at risk every single day with no concern. So I just definitely, I don't want anyone to not be well. I think the health of our communities are definitely very, very important. Mm-hmm. But, like, my health and well-being is important too.
No, I think, thank you for sharing that. I'm curious though, you know, you mentioned about, you know, not wanting to, you're always at risk of someone else's policy. You're always at risk because of sort of how things get structured. I sometimes personally struggle, like I'm an immigrant. I'm African, I'm Cameroonian. I'm also a queer man. I'm also a black queer man. And this is different identities. And I sometimes struggle in terms of when it's a social issue, like how do I sort of prioritize and how do I sort of fight? Like what battle I choose to fight versus mm-hmm. not fight. And I'm curious for you though, being a woman and being a trans woman, being black and you know, the past year was hard. How have you sort of, and there were so many social issues, right? How you sort of show up to mm-hmm. that full sense of yeah. identity and how do you sort of deal with those different identities? How do you choose which one comes first or comes
second?
I show
up for what's right. Yeah. I show up for what's right. So I think that, like, you know, I think that movements shouldn't have competing interests. We should move in a way that, you know, make sure that we all have an equitable experience in this world mm-hmm. and prioritizing those who are the most marginalized, and data will support, you know, that. And sometimes, like, I'm the type of person that likes to reflect and really hold myself accountable. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think that some of my needs may not need to be prioritized at the moment. Mm-hmm. Maybe some other people in our community need to be centered and uplifted and allowed the space to and the platform to share their experiences and, you know, receive, you know, real change and real change to their experience. So I'm not one who likes to speak for people, but I do like to learn about people's stories and do what I can to show up.
I think, you know, you've done an excellent job. I mean, with the cookout. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one thing I read about you was sort of this trying to create a space for others that you felt is something you didn't have. And so I feel like, you know, when you talk about this idea of fighting for what's right, when you talk about this idea of, you know, listening to someone's story, I think that's a very rare thing people do anymore. I mean, we sort of somehow just look at people and jump to conclusions. Mm-hmm. We look at people, we don't listen. We ask, how are you doing? And so I find it to be very, very, and I think that's something that someone like you doing, and I think less people do a lot, and I think it's a very skill that is commendable mm-hmm. to be recognized. To shift the conversation a little bit, I was currently reading an article in ACLU, and they were talking about, you know, the decriminalization of sex work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the arguments they made was that, you know, the decriminalization of sex work actually does benefit trans people because a lot of times trans people get overly sexualized and stereotyped. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious from your experience, you know, and your thoughts around, you know, is that something you find is a good, you know, route when it comes to, like, because you talk about a lot about policy and changing the policy to fit the people. Is that a policy that you feel sort of fits that line of, you know, one tide lifts all boats?
Yeah, like, sex workers are not criminals. I think what is criminal is the criminalization of sex work. Yeah. That's criminal. Sex work is work. Sex work is oftentimes, like, especially for trans people, what we have to do to survive. We have no other choice. It's the only way that we can, like, get the things that we need in this world. And for some of us, it's the only times we have, like, the most affirming experience, and we are seen in a way, I would say. And I think that we're moving towards a space in our world where there's definitely the creation of spaces where trans people are uplifted outside of, like, you know, like the sexual spaces. But oftentimes, you know, like the experience of trans, like my, I'm gonna talk about my experience. My experience is often hypersexualized. Like people see sex when they, people see sex when I walk through the door, and I am not even a sexual person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like I would not consider myself a sexual person. I don't have a lot of sex. I barely have sex. Like, I think that, you know, a lot of times people just look at me and look like the characteristics of me, and they think that, oh, and I'm like, and I think that that is like attributed to like the sexualization of trans people. Mm-hmm. The way I look is not because like I want to be sexy. It's the way I look is the affirmation of my, you know, my feminine and my woman identity. Like, that's what it is. And this is how I see myself. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, so basically, like, this is how I saw myself, and this is who I am. And I just think that, you know, when trans people who engage in, because trans people, like, we're going to do what we have to do. One thing about a trans woman, a black trans woman, is going to get done by any means. You know what I mean? Mm. I've been there before. I've, you know, and I had, like, my experiences where I was just like, this is, like, not, like, how I want to be in this world, right?
Mm-hmm.
I, like, you're literally providing a service, right? Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes you're part of more than just a service, but, like, a space. Yeah. For, like, people that actually deal with some of the most egregious forms of hatred towards you, mm-hmm. to live out their sexual fantasies and desires, and you give them pleasure, and you literally walk out the door, and like you're totally invisible, yeah. You're totally, and for some of them, you're the scum of the earth, mm-hmm. you know, every time we hear a scandal about like some like conservative. like politician, and they got like some grinder on their phone, right? Yeah. But they're literally actively lobbying against the rights of gay and queer people. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? It takes a strong person to really work in that field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I personally don't want to engage with people like that, especially give them, like, listen to their, like, you, like, sex workers be therapists. Like, they, we, you know, I feel like once you're a sex worker, you're always a sex worker, even if you're not actively doing it. And, mm-hmm. Like, I've had that experience in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even for me, I felt like, for me, I didn't feel like I had to do it. However, when I think back to it, I feel like that was my only option at that point, because I was tired of working in spaces that were not affirming of trans, the trans experience. Mm-hmm. I'm not understanding of my, like, my experience, and I wanted to be my own boss. And yeah. I was able to be my own boss, make lots of money, but it came with a price, and the price was, like, a lot of danger, a lot of things that really, you know, I remember one time particularly, I was in this hotel in San Diego, and I was by myself, and this guy, like, tried to steal my phone. And like he went to run out the door, and I chased after him. And I always latch the door, because just in case they run out, the latch come and I grabbed him. So he tried to take my phone, and then he went to run out. The latch last, and when I went to grab him, I fell like a ditzy girl that I am sometimes. And then he jumped on top of me, and I didn't think he was. My thing was, like, I got my phone back. You could have left. Like, no, when I got him, he, like, really was trying to hurt me. And literally, when I tell you, we fought, like, we got it. like, it's not funny. It, honestly, I literally, like, as he was, like sitting on my stomach, mm-hmm. punching me in my head, and I could not even move. I literally was thinking to myself, one, damn, fuck. Like, no, Gia, this cannot. Like, what the hell? No, like, you know what I mean? Like, my mom, I don't know if my mother knows I did sex work. I've talked about it before in, like, interviews and stuff like that. But I've never talked to her about this. I was like, I cannot go out like this. Mm-hmm. And I prevailed, as I always do. I got out of that situation, and he was running down the hallway. Because I literally had to do anything possible to get him off of me, which I did. Mm-hmm. And then we fought, and, you know, I won. And I'm a survivor, you understand what I'm saying? And after that point, I told myself I was never going to sex work again, but then I still continued to do it. And then there was a point where I was just like, you know what? Like, I'm tired of giving myself to men. Like, I'm tired of creating spaces for men that they don't even, like, create. They don't even give me half of the decency or grace. Mm-hmm. So I stopped. And I just started, like that's why I said, for me, I didn't feel like it was a choice, because I feel like it was a choice. I didn't have to do it, even though I did. But, like I've always, like, been someone, like, I'll go into a job. I don't care what you think about me. Mm-hmm. Hello, how are you? What's going on? Like, yeah, hey, I'm here for the interview. Yeah, it's me. What's the tea?
Yeah.
Like, and then I feel that when I read people meet me and they're so blown away that they, like, oh, I don't care that she's trans. Mm-hmm. A lot of the trans girls don't have that experience. They mm-hmm. go into an interview and people look at them being trans and that's all they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. They're and not to say that they're not profound and they don't blow them away, mm-hmm. but they focus on that and then they don't end up getting a job, like, literally because they're trans. Yeah. But it's never said, right? Mm-hmm. It's never one thing that's, it's never something that's said. It's just an action in, like, the policies that are, you know, are out there. Not policies, an action that is done, and the policies that are out there don't really respond to, like, you know, you interviewing with me right now, and I'm like, oh, he's a black man. Like, I may want someone else. I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say you're not qualified.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they could get around with that. So, that, like, I just think that we need to create a space where, you know, if we decriminalize sex work, we allow for trans people who are sex workers to have more advocacy, apply for, like, more money to provide support, mm-hmm. to provide resources. Mm-hmm. Also, it get, like, if I'm in, like, that situation, I could not call the cops on that man. Mm-hmm. They would have been like, what are you doing here? You know, like, what are you doing here? And I can't, like, you know, and even when you, like, tell them, you don't tell them the truth, you're like, oh, I'm visiting a friend. They were like, no, you're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because of that stereotype that you said.
No,
like,
it's funny you said that. That was actually one of the, you know, lady wrote the article. She mentioned that. She's like, you know, when you put folks in certain positions, when folks have no other way and that's the only route of income, and sometimes that puts them in a position where they're in harm's way, right. and they can't report to the police.
Right.
Or even if they're not even doing anything wrong, they can just be hanging out in the street. And
literally.
She talks about people just walking home from the club at night. And a cop will stop and say, well, like, this stereotype that they're probably doing some form of sex work. And she thinks part of that is that this idea that the policy is decriminalizing, is perpetuating stereotypes, is actually enforcing it and giving, like, actual a law that makes it more rule-based, that someone can go to jail even for something they didn't do just because someone is using your assumption of who they are and their personal bias to create a stereotype for that person.
Right.
So it's funny you say that, because that was one of the things she mentioned about the article. I'm curious, you know, you talk about this idea that sometimes when you show up, you know, people just have this general idea, again, just overly sexualized, whether you're just being yourself, mm-hmm. right? One thing I was reading about you in the cut, I found this very interesting, was that you talk about, you know, if the man doesn't want to put you in the stairway in middle of Times Square and right. like, that's, you don't want it.
I try not to want it. Like, you got to tell yourself that, right?
Yeah.
I don't want it. Like, honestly, I'm gonna be very honest here. Like, sometimes when I'm, like, dating guys, mm-hmm. like, I'd be like, you know, if I was cisgender, they would be all over me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know they would, because they would, right? Like, mm-hmm. like the things that I've done, the things that I do, the my career, my careers, my intellect, like a lot of guys, like I had an experience with this guy one time. It was honestly supposed to be like just like a casual like link up, like, but like I was just, I'm me, I like to talk. So I started talking to him and then we got into like a nasty debate and he literally like looked at me and was like, wow, like I came here and I did not expect to have such a fruitful conversation. And I was just like, and that was because I was trans. You know what I mean? Literally. Like, why can't you meet up with a person casually for a casual encounter and have a robust conversation about the status quo, about black, like, we were talking about, like, something related to police violence. And I was like, why wouldn't I know? Why wouldn't I be able to give my perspective about that? And I think that sometimes these, like, people who are into trans people, because it's not only men or cisgender men. Many types of people are attracted to trans people. And those many types of people also have the shame of being attracted to trans people. I know trans women that are lesbians who date cis women that are lesbian. And the cis women will treat them like they down, like they will be down low. You know what? And I, when they told me about that experience, it was mind-boggling to me. I was like, wait, what? But I'm like, I could see it. I'm like, just like, you know, people don't want to bring you certain places because you're trans. They don't want to bring you around certain you because you're the problem. They see you as a problem. And they see, like, they don't want to be forced in a situation where they have to defend what's right. Because they're not going to defend you because they don't think you're right. So I think that, you know, and I know that trans people deserve an abundance of love. And what better way than someone showing that is at the top of the red steps in Times Square where everyone's watching, right? Yes. And when someone is beautiful in their experience, like, well, like, I think that for me, like, my, some of my most fond memories as a child in New York City growing up is my, are my encounters with trans people. And I think that that is a very particular New York experience. I grew up, like, I met trans people growing up. Like, it wasn't like, when I was a teenager, I already knew what transgender was. My perspective about it wasn't where it's at today because I needed to do some healing and get some education myself. But I was exposed to trans people growing up. And all of them, no matter where they were in their lives, from the drug abusers, the drug users, to the professional girls that I met, to the sex workers, to just the around the way girls, all of those trans women all have something very beautiful about them that deserve to be centered and platformed at the highest level. And that was centered around their transness in a world that has been so cruel to us. Yet they still walked in their power and in their truth.
We'll be right back after a quick message. Hi, this is your host, Churchill. So Living with Churchill is a one-man team. Yes, I am the one in the background doing all of the producing, storytelling, trying to pull together the guests and all of the work it takes to put a podcast together. If you love the stories you've been hearing, if you've loved the communities we've brought together, check the description wherever you listen to this podcast. You'll find a link where you can leave me a small donation. All donations are really welcome and it will go a long way to helping me continue to tell stories, helping me continue to pursue this passion, and can helping me continue to bring you stories from all around the young professionals in this city. I think a lot of times we don't even know how shame is so very ingrained in us. And we don't even know, realize it some of the times that how that unpacking shame comes from a position of fear. Comes from a position where we are not sort of true to our own self and don't even know our own self. And therefore, sometimes when we find ourselves actually showing love in however form we want, we sometimes are afraid of that person.
Because it makes you feel like there's a chance that what you're feeling is not true. Mm. I want to experience joy. I said that when I link with a man, right? I want to leave that man, or if he leaves me, I should feel better about myself when he leaves. I should not feel worse. If you, I said, and I'm giving you advice now, darling. If you feel worse after you leave a woman, don't ever meet back up with them, because that is not a person you should. You should feel better every single time. Why do you want to feel worse? I don't need to be here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do this if that's the case.
How do we change the conversation? How do we move away? How do we unpack that shame? How do you, you know, rising from a rethinking how religion ties to our sexuality, and or rethinking how we approach or speak of trans people? Like, how do we reframe the conversation so it doesn't always have to be a fear headline, but a headline that it's more sort of people living people?
Right. It starts with the kind of the idea of, like, I'm meeting Gia. I'm not meeting a trans... Like, yes, I'm a trans woman, but, like, you're meeting me, and I'm a full person with full experiences. And I think that that's the problem. Like, the humanity of trans people oftentimes get lost in, like, these religious frameworks, in the stereotypes of trans people, that you're not even able to meet people who kind of like don't align or don't fit within those stereotypes. And then when you do meet them, you place all of that on them. And then it just don't even lead to a meeting. It's like, you know, it's like it's like a all out world war at that point.
Yeah.
I think that people need to confront their issues, their discrimination, their bigotry, their ignorance. I think they need to confront that and be inquisitive about, like, learning about different experiences and cultures, and not only the dominant ones in society. Ones that are, you know, are out there. Like, for some reason, like, trans people make up a very small portion of this population, but the things we do are so loud and people cannot take us. You know what I mean? Like, it just be like, you'd be like, come on. Like, you know, y'all need a hate train. So, like I had to, like, I was telling, me and the guy had a conversation, who's fine dining guy. We was talking about, like, he was telling me his perspective about trans people competing in sports. And I said, well, the thing is that you shouldn't have a perspective. He was like, what? I said, I don't compete in sport. You don't either. Right? Let the athletes have that conversation, right? Right? Also, the problem is that the people who are the most passionate about, because the person who, let me tell you something, an athlete, an athlete who's an athlete and a sportsman or woman, they're worried about their game and the game that they bring and what they're bringing. They're going to train to their the best of their ability to be excellent in the sport that they are in. They're not worried about their opponent and who's across the I would say the net, because I like tennis. So across the net. You know what I mean? Like, they're not worried about that. They're worried about their game. And it is like, we allow, like, the onlookers to create these fear-mongering, you know, and then things that are, these arguments are rooted in patriarchy and sexism. You know what I mean? Around, like these sports arguments. And what, and I said to him, it's not about sports. It's about this question I'm going to ask you. Do trans people have the right to exist? You're telling me that trans people should have their own sport. Well, baby, there's only one trans girl in your high school. If that. Right?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that, like, you're talking about trans kids playing, can we, trans kids not being able to play, I mean, playing sports with the gender they identify as, can we talk about the fact that a lot of trans kids don't even want to go to school? Y'all not talking about that, but y'all talking about playing a damn sport. Can we create the conditions in schools where trans kids can feel like they can go to school and receive a quality education if that's what they want? Mm-hmm. Y'all not talking about that, which I want to talk about, like, sports. Mm-hmm. That's, like, you understand what I'm saying? It's like, you know, we need to really get our stuff together as people and really focus on the things that we say are important, right? Like,
yeah. It's funny you say that because I was listening to a podcast called Unbeen, and Ash Bishop Desmond Tutu was on, and he's an Anglican bishop. He passed away. One thing he's always been known for, or at least the church tried to punish him for, was that he has been a very huge proponent for queer people. Because he doesn't believe in this, even though he belongs in the church, he doesn't believe in this idea that queer people are like this scene. Right. And he just said something he said. And he said, you know, we have, as a society, focus on the wrong things. Mm. Who gives a shit about, he used more clear words, about someone's sexual orientation or someone's identity? Where there are people still living in poverty, right. Where there are people still struggling to just make day-to-day ends meet,
right.
Where, you know, we're going through droughts and there are things like that happening in the world.
Right.
And he's like, God is not going to sit there and be like, and give you, hand you a questionnaire when you walk into heaven and be like, fill this bucket. Like, like, God doesn't care.
But you have to think about it. Like, you see, like, Caitlyn Jenner, like, mm-hmm. she's a trans woman with privilege and money.
Yeah.
Like, her rich friends don't give a damn that she's trans. It's like kind of like a, I feel like they just create, like, it's not about, like, it's a reason to have infighting. You know what I mean? About mm-hmm. nothing. Like, mm-hmm. issues that really, like, they're propaganda. While mm-hmm. we're sitting on Facebook trying to debate these issues, we're not putting enough attention to the real issues, right? Like, mm-hmm. that we live in a police state where, like, black people are being murdered crazy by police officers. But now we're talking about something that doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's like, it's a non-issue. Yeah. I said, all right, you want to have a... I told him, I was like, you want to have a conversation about this? Tell me one trans kid you know that plays a sport in high school.
Mm.
Nothing. I don't want to have the conversation.
Yeah. It's funny because I agree with you. It's like this, like, we have this comment. It's a great distraction.
Yeah. It's like five kids. Like, you, like, even in the media, like, I honestly, like, the stories that I've heard, I know the way they look. I don't even know the kids, but, you know, like, they've been on the news. Mm-hmm. There's like some girls in Connecticut and like, there's like a boy, like, I know how they look. I know the sports they play. I know it was runners. It was like a wrestler who was a trans man. Move on, because it's not an issue. It's just a, mm-hmm. it's a distraction.
Yeah. I think, you know, one day I wanted to transition this conversation to, you know, you are a very big proponent of this idea of, like, you know, let people just live in joy. I call it this radical joy. It's like show more than just suffering. Which I have to tell you, like, I am also someone that I don't watch news anymore because of this idea that everything's about, like, the world is ending.
Right.
And it sort of feeds that. But I think, you know, if I read this correctly, you started the Celebration of Trans Women Cookout.
Mm-hmm. Black Trans Women.
Black Trans Women's Cookout. Because you wanted to show that environment that it's about community, about love, mm-hmm. and giving love to the trans women, black trans women, and having them receive love and showing community love that came with it. Like, how did that idea come to you, and how do you, like, you know, why did you start that?
Right, like, I feel like the human experience is, like, very interesting, and it's very, very, very multifaceted. Mm-hmm. And I, like, even in my life, like, I've experienced great pain, mm-hmm. but I've also experienced amazing joy. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to allow a narrative to be presented to the world that my life is miserable. Like, so one thing I don't do on my social media, and I don't share when trans women get murdered. Mm. I don't, because I feel like I don't share it. Like, because I just feel like other people are sharing it out there, but that's not our truth. That's not our truth. People are killing us. That's not our truth. You understand? We're victims. We should not, like, and you know, there's a lot of trans women, like they, like, I don't think this though, because I'm a fighter, like, like, I'm, you already know, I'm gonna fight you. So, The thing is that I don't think that I'm going to die at the hands of, like, a man. Like, that's not my fear. Like, you know, I do walk down the streets and I like, you know, sometimes a guy, like, I may get a little nervous or scared. But, like, I'm not scared that, like, a man is going to, like, hurt me or kill me. But some trans women really think that. And that's why I don't share that, because I have a platform of Black trans women that follow me. And I'm not going to inject that into their lives even more than is already being done. We should not live in fear where I'm afraid to leave my house because of, like, there's monsters out here that can't control, like, couldn't control themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And basically, I like to share joy. I like to share the great things that we are doing. Trans people are doing so many great things. Black trans people are doing great things in this world, really, and have been for a long time. And I just want to, I want to use my platform to showcase the joy that we experience and the growth, so that young people can know that it is possible. You know what I mean? I know when I grew up, like, the images I saw of trans people, like Jerry Springer, it was like images. It wasn't the best representation of trans people. It wasn't. I remember when I, like, you know, came into the ballroom community and, like, there was, like, these two trans women. One was, like, a nurse practitioner and the other one was, like, working in finance. And I was like, what? Now, as, like, a more successful trans woman, like, I know trans women who do great, like, a lot of, like, like, all types of things. Like, I have all types of friends. I got, like, sex working friends, all my girlfriends, through and through. I got friends that are in Hollywood, like, like, top bill. You know what I mean? And I have friends in law. Like, I just have friends in advocacy. I have so many. We're doing a lot, and I think that needs to be showcased.
Oh, I agree. Because I think, you know, that's also, we show people the same image, the same story.
They're going to believe it. Yes. Like, that's it. Yeah. Like, right? The cookout was created to bring the girls together because we do experience joy. Oftentimes, it's not in public. People don't, I know, like, when I walk through the streets, I'm not smiling. I'm not, like, I don't want you, like, I got a whole show. I got a whole method to it. I don't want to look approachable because I don't want you pulling up on me. They still pull up on me, though. But I know some people get a little intimidated. I'm just, like, tunnel vision, trying to get to where I got to go. I don't want to have no conversations. I'm open to it. But if you're not approaching me respectfully, then you can keep it to yourself. And I'm just, like, moving through the world. But I think that, like, to have, like, an event that caters to Black trans women and that really creates a joyous experience for us, I think that that's revolutionary in public space, and it is, like, something that I will do every year.
Gia, I want to say, first of all, that thank you. I think, I mean, when I did, like, my stalking and I watched you on social media and I read the article, I had an idea of how awesome you were, but, like, to actually be in your presence, I'm like, wow. Like, you're just incredible.
Thank you.
Just, like, you, I don't know if you, like, anyone told you that, but you radiate this sort of very positive, very empowering. You're awesome.
Thank you. You're
amazing. I hope you know that. So I know you give a lot of people their flowers. So I want you to also receive your flowers too.
Thank you. I take them.
What a great conversation. If you enjoyed today's episode and podcast, please rate and review on Apple and Spotify podcasts. It takes listeners like you that keep the podcast going. And most importantly, as always, be kind to yourself.